time once again for Community Forum, and we are very lucky to have with us live here in the studios this morning Dr. Walter Tamasidis. Dr. Walter Tamasidis has over 42 years of industrial experience in the commercial and nuclear chemical industry. He worked for 20 years for DuPont and subsequently 23 years for URS and its predecessors. On July 2nd of 2010, Dr. Tamasidis, the Deputy Chief Process Engineer and Research and Technology Manager for the Waste Treatment Plant at the Hanford Nuclear Reservation in Eastern Washington, was terminated by Bechtel after raising safety concerns on issues that would impact the overall safety and operation of the plant. Walt, thank you very much for coming in and spending time with us this morning.
Okay, Mike, thank you. It's an honor to be on Mike in the Morning.
Thanks. So, start out. Tell us what is the waste treatment plant and what was your role there?
Okay. Before I start, I have to say one thing, and I've always wanted to do this. Good morning, Seattle! My name is Walter Tamasidis. I was the Deputy Chief Process Engineer at the Waste Treatment Plant Project in Hanford. The Waste Treatment Plant Project is called the WTP, Waste Treatment Plant Project. It's also known as the WTP Plant. It is the biggest cleanup program in our country, environmental cleanup program. It is the biggest single project in our country, and that translates to taxpayer dollars, which we'll talk more about. And it's also the biggest nuclear chemical plant ever built in the world. And by nuclear chemical plant, the emphasis is on chemical plant, not nuclear. It's not a nuclear reactor. It's not a nuclear generating station. It takes the 56 million gallons of nuclear waste, hazardous nuclear waste that was generated in the from World War II, the bomb effort, and the Cold War afterwards, and it converts it into glass. And then the glass would be is a very stable waste form, so the I'll say the bad actors in the waste can't reach the environment. And the glass will be put in some repository, and I'm sure all your listeners have heard of Yucca Mountain and other ways to handle the waste. But that's a big issue right now as to where the waste will go. But the objective of the plan is to put that bad waste, the bad acting waste, into a glass form. Now, there's 177 waste tanks at Hanford, Mike. 177. Let's call it 180 for round numbers. I'm an engineer. And about a third of those have leaked. So that means about 60 of them have leaked, are known leakers, which puts the waste in about 120 tanks. Those 120 tanks hold the 56 million gallons of waste. And those tanks are way past their design life. So there's a number of hazards that exist even if the plant is not built. And the biggest potential disaster is for those old age tanks to leak or for something abnormal to happen in them and for that material to be released into the environment, because the Columbia River flows right by the plant. And, you know, over the past decades, it's been known that nuclides have reached the Columbia River. So there's a number of aspects of safety that really need to be addressed.
All right. And a lot of those tanks, we literally don't know what's in them. I mean, it's a mix. It's a soup, right?
Yes, sir. It's a mix of soup. The waste is in a form where they call salt or sludge. Salt is where you take the waste and you evaporate the water off to concentrate it and little crystals form. Sludge is where you have essentially solids and it's mixed in with the water and it's like the watery material and it's like a mud. So much of the waste is very thick, very thick. And when it was pumped into the tanks, it was not well mixed, or due to the difference in the weights of the material, as they went into the tank, they layered, they segregated. And in the past, over the decades, when they were putting waste in there, no, they were not sampling it thoroughly. They do not have any extensive analysis. To give you a couple numbers, I mentioned that there's 56 million gallons of waste sitting in about 120 tanks. Out of 56 million gallons of waste, if they have sampled 100 gallons of that 56 million, and let's even call it 1,000 gallons, of the 56 million gallons of waste, that's all they've sampled to really tell what's out there. So you have, if you divide 1,000 gallons by 56 million and multiply it by 100, you have the percentage in your, of waste that's been sampled, and you'll see that is a 0.0000% whatever waste that's been sampled.
So what specifically was the scope of your job, and how did you get fired, basically?
Okay. My job back in the mix, there been a number of technical issues existed with the plant. My job, and really the job of my group, I had an outstanding group with many outstanding people in it. They're all outstanding. Let me say it that way. They're all outstanding, and there's a lot of outstanding people in the project. But one of the issues which was really plaguing the project was the mixing issue. In late September of 2009, the DOE management asked that I and my team be specifically put in charge of the mixing program to drive at the closure. When I went into that program, I told the Bechtel management, I said, I will take the project on, but one of the criteria is that Bechtel Engineering will implement what we recommend. I said in the past, and I used these exact words in a meeting with Greg Ashley and Ted Fagenbaum and Bill Gay, I said, I have been stabbed in the back in the past by Bechtel Engineering, where the R group would recommend something and then engineering would say, no can do, no do, can't do. And the reason for that was obvious. If they implemented what we recommended, it would cost a bunch of money, and Bechtel didn't want to spend the money on their nickel. Now, it's all taxpayer money, and this gets a little complicated, so I'm going to try to go through it quickly and simply, hopefully, for everybody. It's all taxpayer money. The plant right now was originally Bechtel quoted $4.6 billion of taxpayer dollars to build it, $4.6 billion. Recently, they announced that it appears it's going to go to $13 billion, near $13 billion, 4.6 to $13 billion. They've been on it 10 years. So it's increased almost $10 billion over a decade, $10 billion, a B, not an M. And now when they look ahead, there's internal studies right now saying the cost is going to top $20 billion. And that does not include the additional support facilities that are needed, such as a low-level VIT, fixing the pretreatment plant. They're even considering a pretreatment for a pretreatment. There's problems in the pretreatment plant. I know I'm getting complicated here, but that's the front end of the VIT plant where I could come back to it, Mike, but it's the front end of the VIT plant. And they're even considering a pretreatment for a pretreatment. Apparently, they think if one doesn't work well, two will work better. So my group was responsible for solving those problems. Bechtel, in October at that meeting, agreed that they would implement what my group decided was needed. And they... I was even told, throw the kitchen sink at it, Walt. Throw the kitchen sink. We want you to solve this problem. DOE wants you to manage it. Solve the problems. In January, a new Bechtel manager came in, Frank Russo. And it became obvious from the beginning that the first question asked was, well, how do we live with the tanks we have? And then, shortly thereafter, he made two organizational moves. He put a Bechtel manager over the mixing program, over me, which DOE had asked for me to run the program, but he put a manager over me, which in a way was okay because I could focus on the technical aspects, but it gave him the direct route to the program through the Bechtel management. He also, at the same time, which is more telling, moved engineering away from URS, the company I work for, so that it reported directly to him. So he now is essentially asking, how do we make the existing tanks work? And, oh, by the way, organizationally, he not only controls the mixing program, but he controls the engineering group, directly controls the engineering group. So from there, we got into March. I'll fast forward to March, and a DOE chief scientist, very smart individual by the name of Dr. Don Alexander, raised questions with some of the tanks about the mixing. And the questions he raised dealt with this sludge material that you were asking about, Mike, the waste. It's a very thick material. And he was asking, if we have solids in it, like particles of sand, mixed into the mud, and you start to disturb the mud, and the mud becomes a little bit thinner, you add some water, what happens to these heavy particles that are in it that are like gravel? And they represented some of the bad actors in the nuclear waste. So it appeared what would happen is, as you stirred the mud, if you will, the slurry, the gravel would fall to the bottom. And the gravel represented the plutonium. And if the plutonium kept falling to the bottom, and the mud kept moving to the top, you're concentrating your plutonium. You have the potential to concentrate your plutonium at the bottom of the tank, which could lead to a criticality. Now, a criticality is an uncontrolled nuclear reaction where you get a burst of energy, very similar to what goes off in a bomb. It's very quick, and it's over suddenly, but it makes for a bad day. Now, the other thing that can happen in the tanks and the slurries, I talk about the poor mixing. One of the major, major issues, Mike, is that the thick waste, it's really like a ketchup. And when you turn a ketchup bottle upside down, the ketchup doesn't flow out. So we've all know you have to beat on the bottom of it. And then they went to plastic bottles so you could squeeze it to get it out. And what happens is the waste, hydrogen gas is generated in the waste from the radiation. And the radiation, for a quick chemistry lesson here, splits the water molecule, the hydrogen and oxygen molecule. And you always have gas being generated. Well, these little bubbles get trapped in the waste because they're not buoyant enough to come up through it. It's just like taking a Dairy Queen Blizzard, a straw, and if you give a little puff, poof, into it, the bubble will actually stay down in the ketchup or in the Dairy Queen Blizzard. But as the bubbles accumulate, they start to go together. You get a big bubble, and then you get what is a burp, just like in a water cooler. The bubble now is big enough that it can bloop up by itself to the top of the tank and create a very explosive atmosphere in the top of the tank. And in the safety world, you have to allow that you always have a spark. You cannot assume you don't have a spark. So your safety protection is to protect against fuel or oxygen. You always assume you have a spark. And by having the burping gas, which they've had in tanks, SY-101 at Hanford was a classic burper, you have to allow that you would have an explosion. So the poor mixing leads to trapped hydrogen gas, which can burp for an explosion and a criticality. So now back with that little bit of background, sorry for the digression. It's now March, and Don Alexander raised the questions about the, I'll call it the pebbles settling out to the bottom. I looked at it, and I offered to actually provide a counter to Don Alexander. Thought I could look at the data, look at the testing, and thought maybe Don had missed something, quite frankly. Well, when I looked at it, I concluded Don was exactly right, and I recommended testing be done. Now, the problem was, if we added that testing into the program in March, there's no way it would have completed by June, and there was a $5 million bounty on the line for Bechtel. So Bechtel, URS, would get $5 million if they could claim the program was finished, if you will, by the end of June. So now, here it is, the beginning of April, and old Walt, Don Alexander, saying, hey, you need to do this testing. Well, now back to the management. The management concluded or decided that they would attempt to pencil whip it. And they're going to torque, if you will, people at national labs to say that no testing is needed. Well, things are really beginning to smell bad. As you get to the May period now, I'm beginning to sense I'm being isolated. People are not inviting me to meetings. I'm not getting key reports that are coming out. And it's now heading into June. In June, the engineering management, Bechtel Engineering Management, asked for a clean-the-drawers exercise. So a clean-the-drawers exercise meant everybody bring forth your issues and let's put them on a list and see what we have. Well, most people, the brighter lights on the tree, I'm not the brightest light on the tree, but some of the people who brought forth issues had one or two. My list had almost 50 issues. And you can guess it, many of them dealt with mixing. Meanwhile, the Bechtel management, URS management, DOE management are pushing to get this issue closed. And I could tell that was wrong. That did not sit right. So I had basically three approaches. I could do nothing. I could take a frontal attack, or I could attempt to solicit input from others and see if others were concerned. The frontal attack wouldn't have worked. It'd just been chopped down, if you will, standing up. They had already isolated me and cut me out of meetings and so on. The doing nothing did not work either. It was wrong. The plant would not work. It was major safety hazards. If somebody didn't speak up, Bechtel would have continued to push forward with the design, and it would have been doomed to failure from that day on. So I sent out an email to three consultants saying, hey, here's what's going on, and essentially, what do you think? Well, now the management, two things happen on July 1st of 2010. They get the email, and now they're aware of the 50 issue list, which they were aware of a week earlier, had been sent to Barbara Rosinko, the engineering manager, Bill Gay, the top URS manager, and they were aware of what the issues list was. So I go in for a meeting on July 1st, and to make a long story short, I go in. My group was being reassigned to another area on the plant. I went in with one of my staff, and the manager comes out that I'm going to meet with, the operations manager, and says to my deputy, you could leave. You don't need to be here. What's going on? The meeting has changed. Get in the office. Give me your badge, your BlackBerry, your phone, and you're fired from the project. And I said, huh, what? What's going on? You know, you must have the wrong person here. I'm not a morning person, but gracious, you know, this sounds bad. What's happening? Nope, I told you I don't have anything more to say. Give me your badge, your BlackBerry, your phone, and get off the site immediately. You'll be escorted off and get off the Hanford site. Wait. Who made the decision? Frank Russo, the Bechtel manager, made the decision. Can I go back to why did he make it? I don't know. Why? I don't know. I turned to the HR manager. How come? I don't know. Just get off the site. I'm doing what I'm told. Give me your equipment and get off the site. I said, well, you know, now I'm clearly not getting any answer. Can I go back to my office and get my personal things? No. I said, you can't do anything. You got to go leave the site. I said, okay, look, it's 4th of July weekend. I have somebody babysitting my dog. I'd like to pay them in advance. Their daughter's baby. No, you can't even talk to anybody. We're going to escort you out through a route where there's not a lot of people, if you will, to the front door, and you'll go. So I got escorted out down to the front door. It was an off day. I was actually in there on an off day for this meeting, and the doors are electronically controlled, and the HR person opened the door, said goodbye. I asked one more time, why? What's going on? Don't know, Walt. I don't know what's going on. You got to leave. And pulled the door shut behind me, and then that click, which I heard, Mike, I mean, still echoes in my ears. So now I'm standing in the parking lot, and just had the most, I don't know, shocked, stunned, useless feeling. I'm not sure how you would describe it that I ever had, like a man with no country after 43 years of work, 42 years of work at that time. It's like a man with no country. Where do you turn? So I went home, and I'll try to fast forward here if I have time. I went home and I pulled in the garage, and the wife said, what are you doing home? What'd you forget? Because, you know, often I forget my phone or something. I'm not a morning person. And I said, you won't believe this. I just got fired from the project. And she said, no. Oh, yeah, right. Clearly, you must have another reason. No, I got fired. And I must have had an ashen look to my face, pale. And she could tell right away I was serious. So I went in, I made some phone calls, was told to go to Aiken, South Carolina to meet with one of the vice presidents the following week. As I thought about things over the next 2 weeks, I said, you know, this is wrong. What they did was wrong. I don't even have a reason after 2 weeks why they did it, what they propose, what they're going to do with me, nothing. This is wrong. This is not right. It just smelled bad. And I had always told my young people, when you're going to do something, ask yourself, what do you think is the right thing to do? And then ask yourself, what are you going to do? Now, if there's a difference in those two, are you willing to stand up and tell the people why you're not doing what you think is the best thing to do? So as I thought about it, Mike, I said, you know, this just isn't right, and I really wanted to have it addressed. I was concerned if I had three desires, which I have right now, the three desires, three reasons I got into it. One is so young engineers know that that is not the way you manage. What they did was wrong, the reason they did it was wrong, how they did it was wrong, why they did it was wrong. It is not the way to manage, and I don't want any person that's going to be following as an engineering manager in our country thinking that that is the right way to manage, period. Second, I want to see the WTP built well. We need the WTP, especially in the Northwest. This 56 million gallons of waste is sitting on the shores of the Columbia River, and it's got to be put in a more stable waste form. If I had not written the letter to the Defense Nuclear Facility Safety Board, they would have just moved ahead, and it would have been a monument on the Hanford horizon years from now. Thirdly, I wanted to see the culture addressed. And by culture, I mean the management processes, how things are managed, the contract clauses. I want to see things change so that contractors cannot operate the same way in the future. So I wrote a letter with those three things in mind. I wrote a letter to the Defense Nuclear Facility Safety Board. Thank God that they're out there because they are the only person watching the fox in the hen house. If they weren't there, if the DNFSB wasn't there watching and issuing recommendations, DOE has given the fox the hen house, and the fox is not only eating the chickens in your hen house, he's eating the hen house and the chickens in the neighbor's hen house. So it is, there's a number of changes that need to be made, including more oversight over DOE, the Department of Energy. So, and we're now engaged in the legal battle to hopefully to get those things done, implemented. There was a major hearing in Kennewick Thursday with the Defense Nuclear Facility Safety Board. And I think the session was outstanding. And when I say outstanding, I mean, I believe the people, the community, there were people from Portland there that got an earful of what the problems are. I would find it very hard to believe, Mike, that anybody coming away from that meeting could come to any conclusion other than, holy mackerel, this place is laced with technical problems. They have no safety basis established, no controls in mind as to how to control it, and the culture is really down the rat hole. I mean, there were people, craftsmen who showed up to talk, people from the tank farm, people I don't even know showed up and were off in public comments. So now the ball is in the court of the Defense Board, and they've done an outstanding job about 18 months from June of, or July of 2010 to now, 21, whatever it is in months. They've done an outstanding job in following up on DOE. The issue is that the Defense Board has no, authoritative power for correcting it. They can issue recommendations, and my mind is escaping me on the word. They don't have, they don't have the right to enforce it. I'll call it enforcement. They've got the authority to issue recommendations, but they don't have enforcement authority. So they have teeth, but the teeth are a little blunted. So some of the things I'd like to see change is I'd like to see a technical group established to put over the WTP to really make the decisions on what's required technically for this place to work. I mean, we're going to spend, that plant will cost, I assure you, over $20 billion for the complete system by the time it's done. And to build a plant where you're going to risk a hydrogen explosion, where you're going to accept explosions of hydrogen gas in the pipeline, and they say, well, that's okay because the pipe won't break, to risk criticalities, to risk major pluggages in a $20 billion, again with the B, plant, I don't think that's the way you design a chemical plant. Even today, more shocking, the most shocking thing really is today, after a decade, they cannot define what the feed is and what the plant can handle. So we started out, Mike, with an outstanding question from you in the beginning of, gosh, Walt, what's in the tanks? Since they really don't know, they don't really know what's coming through the pipeline. And even if they knew what was coming through the pipeline, they're not sure how to control it. And then they, if they knew and could control it, they don't know if the plant can handle it. So the very basics of a chemical plant on defining your feed and knowing what it can handle, what you're building it for, is undefined. It's ludicrous, but the Department of Energy lets it go forward. I hope people will go to the Hanford Challenge website, will go to the Sheridan Law website, will go to the Defense Board, dnfsb.gov website, read the information and write letters to Doc Hastings, Patty Murray, Maria Cantwell, and demand action, because the money is just, you know, right now it's not being used effectively. And we're talking big bucks in a time when our country cannot afford it. In addition, it's more the culture. As we look forward and the world becomes more and more competitive and smaller, if you will, and I know those sound like trite phrases, well, we need to establish higher ethics, more detail. You can't let engineering managers run wild the way they are and focus on the profits. And Bechtel's approach is to focus on the profits, not on the product. My experience says whenever you focus on the product, the profits come. Their focus is let's focus on the product, on the profits and not the product, and that leads to a very bad product.
Only 2 minutes left.
Okay.
Does Washington State offer any protection to people like yourself who are whistleblowers?
Wow, outstanding question. Let me give the very direct answer. No, Washington State is one of the, I'll say one of the weakest, if not the weakest state in the country in whistleblower protection laws. In fact, they have none. Recent years have indicated that if a contractor in Hanford has a concern, a valid concern, one which everybody would agree, his only way of recourse is to go through the Department of Labor, and I did that in a ground to a halt, and we're now in the federal court system. And for the whistleblower, there is no protection. We're in state court in the appeal process with what's called a, I'll just say a tort suit at this time, state suit.
All right. Well, with that, we are unfortunately out of time.
Wow, there's a lot we could say.
Yeah, we'll have to have you back.
No problem.
Come over to the Seattle area semi-regularly.
I have come over occasionally, and I would love to be on Mike in the Morning again.
All right, because there's obviously way more to cover on this specific issue, and none of this is going away probably in our lifetime.
No, it's and it needs to be addressed. The longer it goes, they're building without having the design finished and even knowing what the design is, and that's just going to cause more pain and more money to correct it.
All right. Well, I want to thank you very much for coming in and spending time with us this morning.
Okay, Mike, thank you. Have a good day, Seattle.
Again, we've just been talking with Dr. Walter Tamosatis, and you can follow his case and what's happening over at Hanford via the Hanford Challenge, local organization working on these issues, and their website is hanfordchallenge.org.